time. Thank you to everybody for attending. Thank you to the Kolo. Thank you to Shomrei Emunah. This topic, the topic of forgiveness, is a far-reaching topic, and I'd like to try to explain to you how far-reaching it is. The title of the lecture is Forgiveness, the Limits of Forgiveness, Holding a Grudge, Bearing a Grudge. The title of the general series that I'm lecturing as part of is the Jewish Ethics Series. I'd like to try to define first and foremost what Jewish ethics is and how Jewish ethics is fundamentally and categorically different than ethics. There is a famous comment of the Bar Tanura, Bavadja Bar Tanura, one of the classic commentaries of Mishnayos, and he notes that the opening Mishnah Maseches Avos starts as follows: Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, umesora liYoshua, liYoshua leZkenim, Zkenim leNeviim, Neviim anshe Knesset Hagdol. It's essentially in a sentence the entire history and transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, gave it to Yeshua, Yeshua gave it to the elders to the prophets to the anshe Knesset Hagdol. That takes us from Matan Torah to about Bayesheni. That's a good 1,000 years plus. The Bar Tanura questions, why is it that that statement, which is really fundamental and a principle, a backbone to all of the transmission of Torah, should be tucked away in Maseches Avos? Maseches Avos is found in Seder Nezikin, which is very, very far away from the beginning of Shas, Zerayim, Brachos. That would have been a good place to lay down the foundations of the transmission of history of the Masorah of the Jewish people. Why is it here specifically in the area of Nezikin, of Torah, damages, that the Mishnah starts with the transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh? The Bar Tanura explains, when it comes to Maseches Avos, which deals fundamentally with ethics and Jewish ethics, one could argue that there are Jewish ethics and there are other ethics, and all are the same, and there's no difference. When it comes to other aspects of Torah, the areas of Bein Adam L'Makom, interpersonal relationships between man and God, there everybody knows that there's Jewish rules, and there's halacha, and there's Torah, and there's everything else. However, when it comes to issues relating to ethics, one could argue that Jewish ethics and ethics itself are similar, and I have my opinion, a rabbi has his opinion, and the ethicist in the New York Times has his or her opinion, and they're all the same. The Bar Tanura explains, therefore, specifically here, when it comes to the transmission of the Torah and Maseches Avos, which deals primarily with ethics, that's where we have to lay down the foundation stone of what ethics is, and that ethics also is sinaitic, not just when it comes to laws of Kriya Shema, of Tefillah, of all aspects of relationships between man and God, but when it comes to the issues of ethics, ethics are from Sinai itself, and that's why the first mission of all Maseches Avos starts with the transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh. The topic of forgiveness speaks to this specifically. Ethics touches on every area of scholarship, from law to politics to psychology to sociology to psychiatry and to religion. There is nobody that ever doesn't deal with issues of forgiveness in all walks of life. Each of you in your own professional careers, and each of us in our interpersonal relationships, whether it be family, colleagues, friends, all deal with issues of mechila, which is the Torah definition for forgiveness. In the last 2 decades, and I have some of the research I share with you in the latter pages, there's been an extraordinary amount of fascinating material, scientific material, algorithms, suggestions as what forgiveness is, how far-reaching forgiveness is, and how important it is to forgive. Data, statistics, algorithms on the importance of science and health dealing with forgiveness is a topic that is very, very hot today. It's a topic that is much and widely discussed, and again, in all these areas as well. So I wanted to touch on the Torah approach to what forgiveness is and see if the scientific approach, see if the varying religious approaches to what forgiveness is and how forgiveness works, as well as at the same time trying to understand how we approach forgiveness and how far we have to go to forgive, and do we always have to forgive. I'd like to share a case in point before getting to the lion's share of today's topic. Simon Wiesenthal, the famous Holocaust personality, was approached and summoned to the room in the hospital of a dying SS guard. The SS guard's name was Karl. Karl asked Wiesenthal and told Wiesenthal about some of the atrocities, some of the murders that he committed, and some of the most devastating things that are very familiar to us today that he was involved with. After describing in great detail to Wiesenthal exactly what he did, he asked Wiesenthal to forgive him for his actions. Wiesenthal was stunned, was shocked, and did not know how to react. Wiesenthal sat for a few moments, and after contemplating what was just brought to his attention, left the room and walked out. This communication and dialogue that Wiesenthal had with this SS guard, Karl, haunted him for years. After the war, he was still haunted by it and decided to pen the story. And in a book today, which I highly suggest you reading, called The Sunflower, Wiesenthal describes in a short monograph what exactly happened, the occurrences, and talks about it. But Wiesenthal didn't stop there and decided to send the events of the Sunflower to upwards of 50 scholars, theologians, religious leaders, activists, psychologists, psychiatrists, to see what they would have done in his situation. Shocking are some of the responses. Of course, the Christian approach to this is that Wiesenthal made a horrible error, and that Wiesenthal, which should be shamed, including great Christian leaders, popes, bishops, who said that there was a shame. Forgiveness is part of mankind, and that's something that we should do, and he didn't do the appropriate thing. Dalai Lama responded to the book, The Sunflower, and he also wrote that Wiesenthal lost a big opportunity not to forgive. Clearly, the halachic approach is fundamentally different. Halacha only requires one to forgive if I am the aggressor, if I have been the individual who is the sufferer, if I am the abused. As a third party, in halacha, there is never the right, there's never the opportunity, and there's no halachic, absolutely no halachic requirement to forgive somebody else for something that he or she did to a third party. I'm a third party, I have no relationship in that duel or in the feud between two individuals, and you can't come to me to ask my forgiveness. And of course, the halacha would speak very loudly and very clearly that Wiesenthal did absolutely the right thing by walking out, and it's uncontested and unquestionable that there's absolutely no reason for Wiesenthal to have had to forgive, and that is the appropriate approach. I'd like to talk about this morning is not that example particularly, and there's lots to talk about in that case, but take somebody who's been abused, be it physical, emotional, mental, who has suffered terrible pain from the abuser or from the individual who has really, really done damage. Again, mental anguish, psychological anguish, physical anguish. And again, this is not an academic question. This is a very practical question. Rabbis are regularly asked, how far does somebody have to go to forgive somebody else? Psychiatrists, psychologists, coaches, are always dealing with clients who are in a situation that they feel are often necessitating them to forgive somebody else. Now, another point that has to be made, of course, is that the only time halacha requires me to forgive somebody else is if the individual has asked my forgiveness. Until I've been asked to forgive for what I have done, I have no requirement whatsoever to forgive. So therefore, out there in the cosmos, I don't have to start forgiving everybody and anybody for any damage that's taken place, because that person hasn't asked forgiveness. Now, you might be wondering, we just finished Yom Kippur, and we begin Yom Kippur with a Tfilah Zaka, authored by the Chai Adam, and there the Chai Adam says, I forgive everybody and anybody who ever harmed me, never did anything wrong to me. How does that work? That seems to me to be what's called a awesome, 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 beyond reproach situation. Of course, if I don't forgive somebody, so it's not included in that statement that I made on Erev Yom Kippur or on Yom Kippur proper, unless I really want to go lifnim mishurat hadin beyond the shadow of death and forgive everybody. But the Tzvila Zaka is something that has to stand on its own. But literally speaking and figuratively speaking and halachically speaking, the only time I am required to forgive somebody else is if somebody has actually asked my forgiveness. So therefore, in the situation where I have been asked forgiveness by somebody who's done something awful to me, terrible to me, and brutally damaged me, my career, my name, my psyche, my emotional well-being, do I have to forgive? And how far do I go to have to forgive? This morning I'd like to talk about three different aspects relating to that question. Number one, what is the Torah approach to forgiveness? What does the halacha think about forgiveness? Is forgiveness a good thing? Is it a okay thing? Is it voluntary? Is it mandatory? Is it true? Is it false? What is forgiveness? And how far do I have to go to forgive? Number two, are there exceptions to the situation that I don't have to forgive? And can I tell somebody, I don't forgive you? What you did to me was downright awful. It's something that you should be ashamed of, and I absolutely don't forgive you. What are the limits, and when can and can I not pull out that card? And finally, I'd like to try to leave us with two or three approaches when we are in a situation where we've been hurt or damaged. Are there ways that the halacha or philosophical scholars and Torah research speaks to how we can actually help ourselves come up with ways to forgive somebody who has harmed us? If you take a look in the first set of sources, sources 1, 2, and 3, speak to the Torah approach to forgiveness. If you look in source number 1, it's a Mishnah at the end of Maseches Bava Kamma in the 8th Perek, Perek HaChovel. The Mishnah talks about a very famous biblical story that we'll read in just a few weeks at the end of Parshas Vayera. You're all familiar that Sarah and Avram were traveling to the city of Gerar. Gerar was under the authority of Avimelech, and Avram was very concerned about Avimelech and his people abducting Sarah. And as a result, Avram tells his wife, Sarah, don't tell them that you're my wife, tell them that you're my sister. Imrina achosiyat. Don't tell the people that you're my sister. And indeed, that's what Avram does, and he tells Sarah and tells Avimelech that she is a sister to him. Avimelech, in the middle of the night, receives a dream and recognizes, after taking Sarah and abducting Sarah, you're messing with the wrong woman. This is not a sister. This is a wife to Avram Avinu. Avram, the head, the chief of, if you want to call the Jewish people, the man who found monotheism, you're causing trouble. Avimelech is stunned, returns to Avram the next morning, and he says, how could this be? You told me she's my sister. It turns out that this is indeed your wife. Why did you do this to me? Why did you fool me? Why did you not tell me? Avram says, I was concerned. I'm living amongst people who are not appropriate people, who are dangerous people, who are people I was concerned about, and therefore I told Sarah to say what she did. Avimelech turns to Avram and says, listen, do me a favor, get me out of this mess. I'm concerned and I'm nervous. And how does Avram respond? As the first source says, Shenemar, Vayispalel Avram el Elohim, Vayirpa Elohim et Avimelech. Avram turns to God, prays to God. The first, earliest, by the way, sources that we have of tefillah in the Torah, Avram turns to God, prays to God, and God heals Avimelech. That is the story. But what does that have to do with anything? The Mishnah learns from here, questioning, from where do we know in Torah, in Halacha, that a person shouldn't be cruel and should be forgiving? So the Mishnah teaches that from Avram. You see what Avimelech did to Avram? He abducted his wife. He took her. He tried to rape her. He tried to take advantage of her. Nonetheless, Avram returns and responds to Avimelech. When Avimelech says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, I didn't know, not only does Avram say it's okay, but Avram actually prays and mispalel for Avimelech's health, for his successful return, from the successful return of his entire community, of his nation. And ultimately, the story moves on. Avimelech gives some reparations to Avram. Avram and Sarah go on their way, and happily ever after. This is the first source we have. The earliest source we have is the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the Maseches Bava Kamma that speaks to the importance of being forgiven. This is a cruel act that Avimelech did. Doesn't get much worse than that. Abducting a woman, your wife. And nonetheless, once Avimelech apologized, and once Avimelech says, I'm sorry, it's okay, Avram says it's okay. Avram not only says it's okay, but also davens for his well-being. And from here, the Mishnah and Gemara understand that a person shouldn't be cruel. You shouldn't be an achzar. And if somebody asks your forgiveness, you should oblige and acquiesce and say, you are forgiven. The Rambam in source number 2 quotes this Gemara and explains as follows. Asur la'adam lios achzari. A person shouldn't be cruel. V'lo yispayes, and should not accept appeasement from an individual. The Rambam is coming from Mishnah in the Maseches Avos that a person should be quick to be appeased. That you shouldn't be difficult, and you shouldn't give the person a hard time. If you've been asked for forgiveness, give the forgiveness and accept the person's request that you are and actually forgive them. And immediately upon being asked for forgiveness, you should oblige and accept the individual's forgiveness and be appeased and accept the forgiveness, belave shalom, with an absolutely open heart. Ubenefesh chafetza, and with a wide soul. Vafilu heitzer lo v'chata lo harbe, even though you've been abused, you've been sinned again. You've had very, very difficult time that's been pushed upon you. Lo yikom v'lo yitzor. This is the negative commandment in the Torah. Lo sikom v'lo sitzor. Shouldn't take revenge and you shouldn't bear a grudge. And the Rambam says that being a forgiving person, zeh darkam shel zeri yisrael. This is in the DNA. It's in the blood. It's in the lifeline of the Jew to be forgiving. V'libam hanachon. And it's the appropriate thing to do. So the Rambam takes the position of the Gemara at first blush, very, very clearly. The Rambam is very articulate, leaves no stones unturned. It seems very clear from the Rambam that absolutely, positively, one should be forgiving. And the Rambam doesn't list any exceptions to the rule and tells us that you should be forgiving. All bets are off. Anything that has taken place to you, you must forgive. Shulchan Aruch in source number 3, again, also following the first two sources, the source of the Rambam, the source of the Mishnah and Gemara, Maseches Bava Kamma, takes the same approach, and interestingly enough, the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, when he codifies this halacha, leaves out anything about Mechila. He never talks about being a forgiving person. He's only talking about you should ask for forgiveness. But the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, never talks about being a forgiving person. It's only the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserus, and his gloss in on the Shulchan Aruch, and if you take a look at source number 3, it's the third line in source number 3, Haggah. The Mechaber now, the Ramah, rather, quotes the Rambam and the Mishnah and says, you shouldn't be cruel and you should always forgive. But here, for the first time, we see in the Ramah two exceptions to the rule. There are two times where if you have been harmed, you do not have to forgive. Let's see what those two exceptions are. Number one, if you have the best interest of the individual asking you for forgiveness, and you think that by not granting the individual forgiveness, that that's in the individual's best interest, it's in the aggressor, in the abuser's best interest not to forgive him, that the Ramah says, you do not have to then be forgiven. Now, that's very tricky, and it's a loose scale exactly what that situation is. And of course, the Achronim are not so clear in terms of what specifics there are here, in terms of if it's in the best interest of the person. Mishnah Berurah does say that you should remove the sinah milibo, you should remove the hatred from your heart as soon as the person does ask for forgiveness. But nonetheless, the Ramah doesn't exactly define to us what that is. But if you think that it's in your best interest not to forgive because that person will really heal and the abuser and the aggressor will be able to work the issues through, and as a result of you not granting forgiveness, it's that person's best interest. Therefore, the Ramah says that you do not have to. Now, by the way, the Shulchan Aruch does say that you have up until 3 times to say, I don't forgive. So if somebody comes to ask your forgiveness, time number 1, say, I'm sorry, I don't forgive you. I've been pained. Somebody comes again, the second, and says, I'm sorry, I don't forgive you. A third time, say, I'm sorry, I don't forgive you. Those are the rules. I don't have to forgive immediately. I have a bypass of about 3 times. Now, 3 times could be 3 times in a row. It could be 3 times in a lifetime. But I don't have to immediately forgive somebody because it's not clear and it's not simple that I should just be forgiving automatically. So we should be aware that there is some sort of timeline, and clearly halacha does take into account the emotions and the pain of the aggressed, of the abused as a result, because it's been such a difficult thing that you did to me. I can't automatically assume that everything is okay. But nonetheless, forgiveness is still something that is an expectation. However, this is exception number 1. Exception number 2, the Ramah says, is still in source number 3, imhotzi olav shemra. So person slander. Somebody says something about you and it goes viral. And today, unfortunately, this happens regularly. And somebody lets out something about you that you think is awful. And maybe that affects your career. Maybe that affects your job. Maybe it affects a family situation. In that situation, the Ramah says you do not have to forgive the person who let out slander. Now, why not? Why should that be an exception? So the poskim explained that the reason for that is once something goes viral, how do I know that an individual, the aggressor, ever asked my forgiveness? Once it goes public, it's very hard to take something back. So once I've done something, and then Hotzi Shemra has gone out, and the public knows about it, even though I've asked forgiveness for what I've done, how does the world know that I've actually granted forgiveness? Chayadim, the Mishnah Berurah, all explain that in that situation, because it's out there in the world, in the global village that we live in, there's no way to ever, ever, whatsoever make sure that everybody has heard that forgiveness has been given, and therefore, as a result, you do not have to grant forgiveness. Today, I'm curious if in a situation where somebody has done something which is awful, wrong and terrible, and slander has been committed, there's a way to apologize in the same way. clearly our mode of communication today is much different than it was 100, 200, 1,000 years ago. Is there a methodology to allow forgiveness in a situation of slander which has gone viral, the same way it's gotten out? Maybe we could fix that, or maybe we could work that out. I'm not sure what to say, but there is room to suggest such a thing. Those are the two exceptions. The Mishnah Berurah actually gives a third exception that is not listed in earlier sources. Mishnah Berurah says, if it's in your best interest not to forgive because you think that it's dangerous for you to forgive, and by the way, there's a lot of research today about this, I didn't quote all the data, but in a lot of studies today when it comes to family abuse, simply forgiving somebody leads actually in science and in psychology to greater danger, because if I'm always going to forgive, I'm giving the aggressor, the abuser, more opportunity to try to create havoc. So if it's not always in the best interest to give forgiveness because I'm creating a situation that's an automatically charged situation and could cause a second follow-up. So therefore, the Mishnah Berurah does say that if you think it's dangerous for you to forgive somebody else, you are absolutely not required to forgive. So those are the three exceptions that we have to the rule. Now, why is it that I have to be so forgiving? I mean, it seems extreme. The Gemara, the Mishnah, the Rambam, the Shulchan just blanketly tell us that you always have to forgive. Again, we do have some exceptions. If you take a look at sources 4 and 5, which I'm not going to read inside, just to appreciate the hashkafa, the philosophy behind forgiveness, early sources say this, the Mishnah Berurah and the Sharatim, quote from earlier sources pointing this out, that we as Jews are charged what's known as imitatio Dei, which means that we are supposed to imitate God. Mahu chanun afatati achanu. We are supposed to be small gods. We're just reading Bereishis, of course, and our role in life, of course, is to try to imitate God, just like God feeds, just like God clothes those who need clothes, just like God helps the poor. We are also supposed to do that. God is the most forgiving being that exists. Every Rosh Hashanah, every Yom Kippur, God forgives us for the terrible things that we've done. Therefore, as a result, the halacha and the hashkafa teaches that we should imitate God and also be forgiving. Somebody did something wrong to me, I should let it go. I should sweep it under the rug. I should try to move on with it because I want to be like God. There's a famous sefer, Kabbalistic sefer, called the Tomer Dvor of Moshe Cordovero, and he at great length speaks about this topic of not bearing a grudge, of being forgiving. And again, his approach, as well as many of the early Rishonim's approach, is that we are a forgiving people because our God is forgiving, and we want to be like God. Again, God doesn't always forgive, and what we would try to find out is, do I ever not have to forgive? There is an exception, a fourth exception, possibly, that's found in one of the works of the Rishon, Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, source number 6, has a sefer called Shari Tshuva. Shari Tshuva is the Shulchan Aruch, really, on Hilchos Tshuva. And Rabbeinu Yonah talking about the negative commandments of lo sikom lo sitor, not to to bear a grudge, not to take revenge against somebody else. So Rabbeinu Yonah sets down a very, very basic principle here, which not all Rishonim agree to. Now, we all know taking revenge is a negative commandment, a biblical commandment. You can't take revenge. It's inappropriate. That's not something we do. You never take revenge, and you shouldn't bear a grudge. Rabbeinu Yonah says there's one exception, that you could bear a grudge and take revenge. Take a look, Rabbeinu Yonah says in source number 6, Vav, in the last line, second to last line, Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Kazharas hanetira al davar shebemamon." When am I charged and commanded not to take revenge? When it comes to financial situations. When it comes to somebody wronged me financially. Somebody stole something from me, I can't steal from them. Somebody did wrong to me in business, I can't wrong you back in business. But when can I take revenge and when can I bear a grudge? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, last line, source 6, Vav, Aval divrei gaiva uboz udrishas ra'a mutter lasum hadvar malibo. If somebody has caused me emotional pain, if somebody has caused me verbal pain, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will ever harm me, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't like that jingle because he thinks that if somebody did wrong to you verbally, emotionally, mental abuse or anguish, Rabbeinu Yonah says you could take revenge against that person and you could also bear a grudge against that person. A very, very major statement. This is not necessarily the only opinion the Rishonim holds like this. The Sefer Chinuch, who seems to learn like this, the position of the Chafetz Chaim, who tries to make a machlokas out of Rabbeinu Yonah and the Chafetz Chaim, but nonetheless, black and white, it does seem that the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, holds that you can bear a grudge. Therefore, if I am the recipient of evil that's been done to me, harm that's been done to me, verbal, emotional, mental, I can bear a grudge and I can fight back. I could fight back emotionally. I could fight back in a different way, and I can take revenge. Now, what Rabbeinu Yudona doesn't speak about is, let's say that person asks mechila from me. If the person who harmed me emotionally, or the person harmed me verbally, or the person harmed me psychologically, now comes back and says, hey, please, I apologize, I'm so sorry for what I've done. Well, what would Rabbeinu Yonah say there? He'd say you'd have to forgive. Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't say that you don't have to give mechila to that person. Rabbeinu Yonah only says that I could bear a grudge against that person, I could take revenge against that person. But once that person asks my forgiveness, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, I still have to forgive. Sources 1 through 6 close the topic of forgiveness in the works of the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the Rishonim. There's very, very little written about the topic of Mechila. In the medieval sources, there's very little written about this topic altogether in the works of the Rishonim. And up until this point, in source number 6, and in about the year 1600, this is all we have about the topic of forgiveness. This rule that you always have to forgive, and the three exceptions to the rule. Number one, if somebody has slandered you, and number two, if it's in the aggressor's best interest not to give forgiveness to that individual, then you are permitted to hold onto your lack of forgiveness in that situation. The world changed with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is well known to us as the founder of the Muslim movement. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter lived in the mid-1800s, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had a biography written about him by one of his outstanding disciples, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, otherwise known as Rabbi Yitzchak Petersberger. That's where he was the Rav in the city of Petersburg. And he wrote a biography about his Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and it's cited here in source number 7. It's called Nesivos Or. It's a short monograph about the life of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And in there, he has two paragraphs of Rabbi Salanter's opinion about forgiveness. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter changes the world, shakes the world, when it comes to the topic of forgiveness, and he gives an approach, which is an approach, but it's shocking what he says. And I'd like to share with you first outside what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, and then I'll read with you inside. Yisrael Salanter explains that imagine that two people are involved in a loan, A and B. And A lends to B $1 million. And A is the creditor, and B, of course, is the lender. And after about a year, when the loan is due, so A, the creditor, turns to B, the lender, and says to him, look, time's up, you got to pay back. And the hemming and hawing, and says, look, I can't pay back. And A, the creditor, says, you know what, I forgive you. I forgive, you don't have to pay me back. I release any requirement that you have on that lien, and you don't have to pay me back, I let it go. Party's over. The debtor got a great deal, he got $1 million, he never has to pay back. Let's say a week later, the creditor comes back and says, you know what, so many people owe me money, they're not paying back, I want that $1 million back that you owe me. What's the rule? That's it. He lost his chance. Once you release and you forgive the loan has been forgiven, and you have no right whatsoever against the debtor to claim that you want that $1 million. In halacha, a loan does not require releasing or forgiving. A financial loan doesn't require any halachic transaction. It doesn't require a kinyan. It doesn't require any written statement, not even a handshake. As soon as you forgive that loan, the loan has been forgiven, and there's no requirement whatsoever to come back at all and to ask that person for that money back.
Even if I had a shtar?
If you have a shtar and you let the shtar go, that's it. You don't have to rip up, you can't, it's smart to rip up the shtar. But it doesn't require any halachic transaction to forgive a loan. It doesn't require a kinyan. And as soon as it's forgiven, it's forgiven. Now, the debtor would be smart to rip it up and to make a statement about that or to write some sort of note. But in halacha, it doesn't require a note whatsoever. Now, let's say the fellow is really tough, and he comes back a week later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, and says, give me that money. You owe me $1 million. If he takes that $1 million, he's a thief. He's a robber, a pilfer. You took $1 million, you forgive me. You want that $1 million back? That's not your $1 million, that's my $1 million. And if you took it, you're a robber. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the same thing is not only true when it comes to financial forgiveness, it's also true when it comes to emotional forgiveness. Yisrael Salanter says that I, as the aggressed, I, as the abused, have an emotional lien against the aggressor, against the abuser. Right now, I'm in a situation where I'm a creditor to your forgiveness. You owe me forgiveness. I'm holding it very, very tightly. And until you forgive, you owe me everything. And I have an emotional lien against you. Says of yourself, Salanta, when you own that emotional lien, here's the trick. Release it. Let it go. Forgive. Even if you do not feel appeased by that person, let the lien go. Once you let the lien go, you've granted forgiveness, even though you have a pain in your heart and you have a pang in your heart, in your soul, and that person has created such evil and has done wreaked such havoc to you. Once the emotional lien has been released, I no longer have a claim against that person, even though I feel pain. And even though I still have that pain in my heart, says of Yisrael Salanta, you have become a forgiver. Even though it still pains me and it still hurts me. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta does is he creates a split between what he calls mechila and what he calls pia. There's something called forgiveness and there's something called appeasement. Even though I don't feel appeased, forgiveness is a lien. It's no different than a financial lien, I have an emotional lien. And until that emotional lien is released, I have it. But if I remove that emotional lien and I let it go, I let it go. I forgive it. Even though what I've done has still been hurt. I've still been pained. I'm still crying inside. The appeasement is not there, but the forgiveness is there, and that's enough. Now, Yisrael Salanta has done an ingenious thing, and he's allowed a person to be forgiving even though I'm still charged, and even though I still have pain, and even though I'm still in sorrow. Therefore, what Yisrael Salanta wants to do is to make sure that I'll be a machlan, I'll be a mochel, I'll be a forgiving person, while at the same time, I'm still recognizing that there is a lack of appeasement there. Take a look in the second column, in source number 7. I don't want to read the whole piece if you have time. It's very, very valuable. It's a very important statement here, the both paragraphs, but in terms of the time that we have, I'd like to read only a paragraph. So if you look in the second column, still on the first page, Mar Makom Zayin, source number 7, the paragraph starts with Vihine. Vihine, Kmo B'Tvias Mamon, just like when it comes to a financial claim. Im Yielol Adam Chov Mamon Etzal Chaveiro. If I'm a creditor against a debtor, v'yim cholo achov, and I release and I forgive the financial loan, hine mechila im tzarach kinyan, to be mochel, a financial forgiveness, that doesn't require any halachic transaction, v'mitzcharet acharkach, and afterwards I regret that I forgave that loan, v'yitzva mimenu eschova, and I now go to the fellow and I say, hey, you owe me $1 million, Hari hu gezel gamur, that's absolutely stealing. And it's a deraisa, one of the Ten Commandments. Me'acha shekfram machal asachov. Once I've forgiven the loan, it's forgiven. Kmo came similarly, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, im yelu al chaveiro tzviya me'eze chet shechata. If I have an emotional lien against somebody as a result of what that individual has done to me, asher al pidin reshay liyosolav taromet v'kpeda, that I'm halachically permitted to have a lien, a emotional lien against that person. That's what Yisrael Salanta deals with in the first column, and I skip that. If I forgave that person, and the person is mochel, right? I as the abused, or I as the aggressed, have given forgiveness, even though I still have a emotional pain in my heart, who avon plili, that's an absolutely awful sin that you have. I am claiming something against my friend which I have forgiven. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, forgiveness is a halachic concept. It's not an emotional concept. It's no different than mechila. The word mechila comes up when it comes to emotions, and the word mechila, forgiveness, comes up not only when it comes to emotions, also when it comes to financial obligations. And they are the same. And just like I forgive a loan, I also forgive an emotional claim I have somebody. Once it's forgiven, and I can no longer go back and claim it. Here's an approach if you've been ever dealt a difficult deck of cards to just forgive. I forgive you. And I've forgiven you. And I can't ever take that back. I still have a pain. I still have an issue in my heart against you. And I still have lack of appeasement. The pious is not there. Nonetheless, that's still called forgiveness. Yes, he uses the word pious. So you're right. But again, you can't... Yeah, no, you're right. You can read a biography like a Rishon, but that's clearly what Yisrael Salanta is saying. There's no question about it. You're right. He does use that word. But piyasa means that I've been appeased as a result of the fact that I have given mechila, and therefore that's sufficient and that's enough. Now, this also, by the way, might deal with an earlier question we had. Maybe this is what we do in Tfilah Zaka, by the way. In Tfilah Zaka, I just say I forgive, and I've released that emotional lien, and maybe the releasing of that emotional lien is simply what I did in Tfilah Zaka, and therefore, I'm actually mochel you. Good. Absolutely. Yeah, you're already, you know, as a psychologist, you're already touching on a particular piece. I'll get to that also. We'll talk about that. Is it good to be mochel, or is it not good to be mochel? I'm sure everybody in the room has a different opinion about that, and every psychologist, psychiatrist, sociologist, and again, in the breadth of this topic, has opinions about that. But nonetheless, in halacha, Rishos Salanta has dealt with a difficult problem in a phenomenal way. He split between forgiveness and appeasement. Just forgive. It's an emotional lien that's been released. Even though I still have a pain in my heart, that's it. It's taken care of. However, it's not so simple. And not everybody agrees with the approach of Rishos Salanta. If you take a look in the third column, source number 8 is a Sefer Ayelas HaShachar, Baron Leib Shteyman, one of the Gedolei Ador in Bnei Brak. He quotes a very famous opinion of Rabbeinu Bechaya. Ready? Spoke about one biblical story, so I'll tell another biblical story. We're in Sefer Bereishis now. One of the greatest catastrophes, or one of the greatest difficulties that in the history we've ever experienced, of course, is Yosef and the Achim, Yosef and his brothers. The pain that Yosef had as a result of being sold to slavery, as a result of being thrown in the pit, of course, is a very, very difficult situation. Now, the million-dollar question is, did Yosef ever forgive his brother? That's the million-dollar question. If you read the four parashiyos, Vayeshev, Mikes, Vayigash, Vayechi, what you do see is that a relationship was repaired on some level. So much so that Yosef says, Kilamichya Shlachan Elokim, I don't have any problem with what you did. This was a godsend. It was meant to be. Hashkacha had it that I was supposed to go down to Egypt, and as a result, I was able to support the family and support you, and everything will be okay. But the million-dollar question still is, did Yosef forgive his brothers? He recognized that it was a godsend, but did Yosef actually forgive them? Rabbeinu Bechaye in Parshas Vayechi says that Yosef was never mochel. And he has a textual proof. If you read the Parshas, and specifically in Parshas Vayechi, you never see that Yosef says, I am mochel. More than that, Rabbeinu Bechaye says, you see the brothers asked for mechila. Read the Pesukim in the Parshas, Parshas Vayigash Vayechi, they asked him, Moy mochel us, please forgive us. Yosef never used the word mechila. So much so, Rabbeinu Bechaye says, as a result of Yosef not being mochel, the stain of the brother's sale of Yosef to slavery remained, and the only atonement for that was, ultimately, the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 Jewish martyrs. The 10 Jewish martyrs, including Rabbi Akiva, the most famous possibly, take the place of the 10 brothers in terms of what they did. And as a result of Yosef never giving forgiveness to his brothers, therefore the stain remained, the blemish remained, and the only way that there was atonement for that sin is once the 10 great Jewish rabbis and scholars were murdered in the most gruesome way. That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Bechaye. Rabbi Shteyman says, I have a good idea. Why didn't Yosef pull Rabbi Yisrael Salanter? He should have just said, I'm mochel you. And then we would have saved the lives of 10 tzaddikim, the righteous, the great, the Jewish leaders. He should have just said, I'm mochel you. Why did he do that? Take a look in the second paragraph in source number 8. Ches and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says like this, and Rabbi Shteyman says like this. V'tzarech lomer, she'yakashel Yosef limchol al atzar ha'gadol sh'asalo. It was very difficult for Yosef to actually forgive his brothers for what they did to him. The lomer Dam shehu mochel belila hargish belave ein zeklum, and just to say I forgive you without meaning it or feeling it is nothing. Clearly, Rabbi Shteyman is not of the opinion of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I can't just say I'm mochel you. I can't split forgiveness from appeasement. Those two things go together. If I don't feel it, I don't feel it. And I can't just say I'm mochel you and I forgive you if I don't really, really mean it. Take a look at the story he tells in the parentheses continued on line number 3 in the last paragraph in source number 8. Misupar, the story goes, Alagon Rebelyol Lapian Zichon Vachar. Rebelyol Lapian is one of the great Musar figures of the last generation. He's a Mashkiach in Yeshiva called Kfar Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael. And he tells that Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian was once asked forgiveness. She'echa bikish men mechila. Somebody came and asked his forgiveness for a particular thing that was committed against him. V'shalo amah, Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian turned to said, what did you do wrong to me? Why are you asking for forgiveness? V'sipe lo mash'asa, and then the individual told Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian what he had done to the Rebbe, to the Mashgiach. V'anolo, Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian returned and said, she'avo bo shnei shavuot, come back to me in 2 weeks. Ukisheba, 2 weeks later, when the individual came back and asked Rabbi Lapian for forgiveness, Amar Shemocha said, I forgive you. V'amar, the individual then asked him, Shebemet hayochel lo miyad Shemocha. Rabbi Lapian said, I would have forgiven you right away. Achirgish shenishalo taromet bilibo, still felt that he still had a pain in his heart as a result of what the individual did to him. However, lachar shnei shavuos, after 2 weeks, she'avar al zeh, when he thought about it, and he contemplated it, and he worked out the issue of what the individual did to him, at that point he said, I'm ready to forgive you. Clearly, Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian does not take the approach of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he recognizes that appeasement and forgiveness are one and the same. And just to be mochel is meaningless. I have to really work it out. I have to remove it from my heart, and I have to create a situation where I absolutely, positively forgive. And until I'm ready to forgive, as a result of the fact that I feel a clean slate, and my heart and my soul are absolutely in the same place, and I'm ready to move on with that individual, at that point, mechila is permitted. So I think what you do see in more recent rabbinic literature, again, very little in the Rishonim, and it begins in the mid-1800s with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and really post his death in terms of his biography and the opinion of Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian, that there are two approaches to take. Either there's a very halachic approach where I split mechila from pius, appeasement and forgiveness are separated, and I could just say I'm mochel you, no different than a financial loan that's been forgiven, an emotional loan has been forgiven. That's the opinion of Yisrael Salanter, and that's an approach that one can theoretically take, and one could argue that's what happens at Tfilah Zaka. The second approach is absolutely not. Forgiveness and appeasement are intertwined, and they always work together, and until I'm absolutely positively appeased, there's never a situation where I could ask forgiveness and give forgiveness, rather, without being absolutely totally appeased. That is... Well, I'll try to show you some later discussion about this. Hard to say there's a prevailing view because it's not really a halachic issue that's been written in any code of Jewish law. This is a biography, and Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian's a story, and we have very little about this. What we do see is that, and from both stories, I think we do see, even from Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian, who didn't give forgiveness, that a person should work on being forgiving. Even if you've been the aggressed, and even if you've been abused, I have to work on it, and I have to work it through. And that gets back to the psychology, sociology, and psychiatry element of it. And again, I'm not finished yet. I'm still building. Yeah.
The forgiveness of Joseph's brothers,
through
the sacrifice of the rabbis, how did one come to that?
How did Rabbeinu Bachai know that? That's another $1 million question. Maybe that's a $2 million question. Look, Rabbeinu Bachaye makes this statement. How he's able to say such a thing, I can't answer that. He's Rabbeinu Bachaye. More than that, I can't comment. He's not the only one. There is a theme in earlier rabbinic literature about this also. I'm not sure if it's a medrash, but many Rishonim take this approach, and they connect the death of the 10 martyrs to what took place with Joseph and his brothers. And again, this speaks to the seriousness of forgiving, of course, and it speaks to the seriousness of what the brothers did. Yeah. Okay, so in Kabbalistic literature, you have an answer. Again, in Kabbalah, philosophy, there may be different. I don't know if that makes it easy for you necessarily, but, you know, I'd like to bring out another point from the story of Yosef and his brothers. If you read the text of the latter Parshios in Sefer Bereishis, very clearly you do see that there's a relationship between Yosef and his brothers. They sit at the same table, they break bread together, they eat together, they have dialogue and communication, and it seems like they're hunky-dory. Till now we've discussed, is forgiveness separated from appeasement? And can I forgive somebody when I have not been appeased? Let's look at it the other way. Can I appease and be appeased even though I didn't forgive? Take, for example, a situation where a person has been really, really hurts in a very dramatic way, but never deals with it, and the relationship continues. And you really, really have a taina, a taromis against that person, and you have a claim against that person, an emotional lien against that person as a result of what they did. But you never dealt with it. I never actually speak about it. The individual, the aggressor, never asked forgiveness, and I never gave forgiveness. How does that work? What do we call that when we're still dealing with each other? A family feud where somebody did something wrong, but I never forgave you for what you did, and you never asked my forgiveness. But we still get together, holidays, Shabbos, we go out, and we talk like friends. But forgiveness was never asked, and forgiveness was never given. What is that? So one could argue that there's no forgiveness. I never dealt with it. I never asked forgiveness. You never gave me forgiveness. Mechila and forgiveness is separated from pius and appeasement, like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Those two things are not connected, and therefore, until I forgave you, until you ask my forgiveness, it's still a messy relationship. Even though on paper and outside on the facade, it looks like we're getting along. We'll go out to dinner, we'll talk, we'll call each other, but as a result of the pain that I've been issued, and as a result of the pain that I feel, I never forgave you for what you did, and therefore, halachically, there's still no forgiveness, and I still have that emotional lien against you, and you still owe me forgiveness, and you still are required to forgive that person if that person gives forgiveness up until that point in time, and the stain still remains. It's still there, even though you're getting along, and you're talking, and you're walking, and you're doing whatever you do. That would be true according to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. According to Rabbi Elul Lapian, however, one could argue that if you're talking and you're friends and you have a relationship, maybe appeasement and forgiveness go together. And you can't separate the two. So it's possible to argue that even though an actual forgiveness was never asked, an actual forgiveness was never given, at the end of the day, the fact that you're working together, you're talking together, you have a communication, and there's a line of communication, that is sufficient even though I, as the aggressor, I, as the abuser, I, as the insulter, and I, as the insultee, still don't feel that we've reached terms. The fact that we're dealing with each other, communicating with each other, where there is some level of appeasement, that would be considered forgiveness. So there's two very interesting nafkamina here. One, forgiveness without appeasement, and two, appeasement without forgiveness. There are two different situations. I could forgive even though I didn't feel appeased, and I could appease even though I didn't feel forgiven. And these will be two separate approaches, two separate situations. According to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you could separate forgiveness from appeasement, and therefore, I forgive you is enough, even though I still feel the pain, and therefore, there could still be appeasement in the world of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and I could still have a claim against somebody, even though we're still talking, we're still friends. Okay, the excellent question.
And so the receiver of the aggression perceives, but the one who gave the aggression, well, it's not really enough.
It's an excellent question. I think your question and your situation is the most common situation, where I, as the owner of the emotional lien, let's say, who wants forgiveness, I'm waiting and waiting. But the aggressor says, I didn't do anything wrong to you. What did I do? And you expected me to ask forgiveness? Chutzpah, I didn't do anything wrong to you. That's a classic case, and it's a very, very hard situation. What I will try to do is move from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and Rabbi Elul Lapian to the second level and try to deal with that question. It's a very hard question. I think it's the most common question, where the two parties don't see eye to eye. When you admit that you made a mistake and when you're asking forgiveness, so then the onus and is on the individual who has to give the forgiveness. And I want to give forgiveness, I'm going to try to forgive, and I have that emotional lien, and I'll deal with it. But when you don't see the same way, and you don't see eye to eye, and you say, I never did anything, you say, what do you mean you never did anything? You did something terrible to me. That's a difficult question. I'd like to move from here to page 2 of the handout. Source number 9 is the Chavetzelas HaSharon, a contemporary work of Mordechai Karlbach of Yerushalayim. He discusses what I just mentioned, and again, because of a time constraint, I don't want to read it inside, but he deals with appeasement without forgiveness, which I just discussed. Is that considered a real forgiveness, even though I didn't let out and say, do you forgive me? So if you like, you could take a look at that. What I'd like to do now is to move to a second level and try to figure out, is there any way that I can deal with a pain or a situation that was given to me and forgive somebody. We had one approach. That's the approach of Yisrael Salanter versus Rabbi Elul Apian. There's a situation where I could just say, I forgive you, and it's all over, and that's enough. I fulfilled my halachic obligation, even though I still have that pain in my heart. Rabbi Elul Apian, of course, disagrees and says that you don't have to do that. Is there any other way that I can manage to forgive somebody when I've been hurt so much? And again, these are real questions. They come up in offices regularly of rabbis, psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists. I was so hurt by this person. How can I forgive them? And this is when you hit scientific and psychological research today. Is forgiveness a good thing? Is it not a good thing? Is it worthwhile to forgive? Should I forgive? Should I not forgive? There's a Sefer HaChinuch in source number 10. Sefer HaChinuch, besides counting the mitzvot, of course, also gives reasons for the mitzvot. And here he is in Mitzvah Resh Mem Aleph, talking about the love of nekama, of not taking revenge. And he explains the following reason why you shouldn't take revenge against somebody. And he says in source number 10, Yud, on page 2, Sheyed ha'adam yitin eliba, a person should know and put to his heart, Ki kol asher yikro mitovah ra, anything that happens to you, good or bad, he siba shetova olav me'es Hashem Yisbarachu. Whatever happened to you, it happened because that's what God wished and willed to happen to you. U'miyad ha'adam miyad ish achiv lo yeh davar bilti rason Hashem Baruchu. Anything that somebody does to you doesn't happen as a result of that individual, it's as a result of what God set up and put into motion that that person should do to you. If a person pains you or damages you emotionally, physically, mentally, you should know that's a result of something that you did wrong. And God decreed that this should happen to you. You should know that this happened to you, the pain, the abuse, the struggle, the suffering that you have, that person didn't really do it to you. That person is only a vehicle to allow that thing to happen to you. If a person is able to recognize this, you are overcoming major obstacles. Now, of course, easier written and said than done. But if a person is able to recognize that what that person did to me, okay, he did that or she did that to me, but at the end of the day, there's something bigger happening. There's a world that God runs. And there's a message to me in the pain that I'm suffering, whether it is in the area of physical, emotional, or mental anguish or pain that I have suffered. It's there for a reason. I have to deal with it. If I can do that, so I'm a tzaddik or a tzaddikus, of course. It's not easy. But at least this is a methodology and it's an approach to try to conjure up, and maybe in your situation, sir, where you think that I didn't do anything wrong, the person thinks that I did do something wrong, maybe it's worth it to go above and beyond the call of duty, to go beyond reproach and say, you know what, I'm sorry. I really didn't mean what I did, and I apologize. If you're suffering, if you're pained as a result of what I did, I apologize.
How can you square that with
child? I'm not going to square that. That's not my, you're 100% right. And like I said, this is a very hot topic today, and this is issues that I deal with. I'm not, you know, a child grows up and he didn't know it, or she didn't know what happened to him when they were 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and now they're getting ready to get married, or now they're in a relationship, and there are a lot of things that are coming back that a parent, a friend, a relative did. Just to forgive is not simple. It's not simple. And whether it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's approach or whether it's the Sefer HaChinuch's approach, yes, I 100%. Look, it could be the child is now 40 or 50 and is able to do that. Again, I'm not saying that that's what should be done with what you have to do. I'm saying it's a way of dealing with a situation. Psychologists have their ways, psychiatrists have their ways, social workers have their ways. What I'm trying to say, and this is with Jewish ethics, the Torah has a way. I'm sharing with you 5 ways. Now, anybody who studies Torah and is involved in Torah Shabbat knows the more answers you have to something, that means that there's more difficulty than you wanted. So it's difficult. Yeah, you had a question. I'm sorry. Same question, yeah.
I don't know who wrote that.
Sefer HaChinuch. A lot of people don't know, so don't feel bad. We're talking about the forgiver. We're not talking that that's an excuse now that I should be a wreck to society.
The fact that the thought is out there. effects of the fact that people believe that God is a Wizard of Oz God turning dials. I don't think that's the way it works.
Okay. Look, we could argue about a lot of things.
I think that's just an absurd thought.
Okay. Look, that's the Sefer Chinuch's approach. I'm not going to comment. Yeah. Because this is what happened.
It's a good question.
Now, of course, like we began, with Wiesenthal's case and situation, a third party can never offer forgiveness. There's a religion out there that thinks that you can't. A Hail Mary and a pardon is enough. We don't work like that. Only the murdered can actually forgive. And because the murdered is not alive, we don't allow such a thing. Okay, yes, you're right. Agreed. Again, there's a Bissel Salanta versus Rebel Yalpian. If you still feel that pain and that anguish and that suffering and you're not able and ready, you don't have to. Shulchan Aruch says, if the rapist comes and says, hey, forgive me for what I did, and you just say, I forgive you, that's not a smart thing to do because you don't feel the forgiveness. If you do, so maybe you do. And maybe the rapist feels that he didn't really do something wrong or it wasn't really rape or it was consensual. There could be a variety of different ways to do this, and that's why it's such a difficult topic. That person will be punished. If the person did something wrong, that person will be punished. There's no question about it. Okay, so we know.
We're told that in our society that it's healing to us, but I don't know that.
Forgiveness. Okay, you can read a lot of the data and the research. I didn't bring it all, and I'll touch upon that. I know I'm hitting 10:30, so I'm frightened a little bit. I beg your forgiveness for going over time. Yeah. You're correct. We're not suggesting that what the abuser or the aggressor did was correct and appropriate. It was wrong and awful. I don't necessarily have to forgive if I don't feel that forgiveness. That's what Rebbe Yalpian said. And the Shulchan Aruch says once, twice, there's situations I've been involved in where a person waited 15 years or 20 years to actually forgive somebody as a result of something that they did. And there are times, that you never forgive. Somebody I know very well felt that he did something wrong to his Rebbe, asked his Rebbe for forgiveness. The Rebbe never forgave him. They continued a relationship, but he felt that the pain that the student did against the Rebbe was just so awful that he was unable to forgive. They continued the relationship and had a very, very healthy relationship for the rest of their life, but the Rabbi never forgave him for what the offense was. So there are situations when you don't forgive, and that's what Halacha says. We should try, we should work it through, but if I've reached a point in a situation where I'm unable to forgive, I don't have to forgive.
Is this an offense against God?
It's a whole nother shiur. It's a good question. It's a good question. It's a very, very good question. Can I take the question and answer just so I could try to bring this to a conclusion for those who are reading? It's actually interesting. The word mechila could argue, comes from the word machol. You know what the word machol means? We say it every morning. Hefachta mispedi lemacholi. Machol is a dance. If I'm able to overcome it, then I look at life as a dance. What happened to me was bad, was wrong, but I could turn it into good. It might take a week, it might take months, it might take years, it might take a lifetime. But machol, a dance, hefachta mispedi lemacholi, and mechila can theoretically work together. I'd like to touch on two final approaches as to how to deal with mechila. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also argues that the word machol, to forgive, comes from machala. You know what a machala is? Sickness, a disease. And here's where a lot of modern-day scientific and psychological research speaks about the importance of forgiving for health reasons. To hold on to a grudge and to hold on to pain and a situation that you're involved with is not healthy. It can lead to machala, it can lead to sickness. You could read a tremendous amount of data and research about this. I've shared some of it with you at the end here. Let me just share a story with you, and we'll finish with a story, and I'll give you a very, very, I hope, a vivid and clear example of mechila, appeasement, and what I call moving on. And this is the approach in moving on and trying to close a vacuum, a gap in your life, and moving on with it. There's a father and son, true story, the Brookstein. The Brookstein family lives today in New York. Mr. Brookstein, Dr. Brookstein, and his father were spending the day some 20 years ago in camp, visiting their daughter and granddaughter. Camp Chedva was the name of the camp. As the Mr. Brookstein, the elder, the grandfather, was walking with Dr. Brookstein, the son, in the camp, visiting their daughter and granddaughter, the grandfather, Mr. Brookstein, sees an individual crossing at his path and turns to him and says like that, a simple nod of recognition. The son, Dr. Brookstein, turns to his father, Mr. Brookstein, says, "Dad, who is that?" And the grandfather says, "That was my best friend before the war." "Dad, your best friend before the war? Introduce me to him. Tell me all about him. I know all your friends. That was your best friend, and all you could do is like that to him?" So the grandfather says, "No, no, no, I'm not going to introduce you to him." So he says, "Dad, come on, introduce me to him." "No, no, I'm not introducing to him." Finally, hemming and hawing, the son says to his father, "Dad, you got to tell me what's going on here." So Mr. Brookstein Elder turns to his father and says, "This was my best friend before the war. We did everything together. We were best of friends. Not only that, we married, we had children, and we were living closely to each other in our community. Hitler came, and life was getting very challenging and troubling and dangerous. I successfully managed to get 3 visas to sneak myself, my wife, and my young child out of Austria to go to Sweden. My friend asked me, 'What are you doing with the impending war? How are you going to manage? How are you going to get out?' He says, 'I have visas, and I'm leaving with my family, and you know where I kept them, in my hiding spot.'" The next day, Mr. Brookstein goes to his hiding spot, opens his drawer, the visas are gone. Doesn't know what to do. He asks his looks to his friend, the only person who knows, and his friend is gone, with his wife and his child. They took the visas, crossed into the country that he was looking to emigrate to, and ultimately snuck away, survived. Elder Mr. Brookstein's wife and child were killed in the war. He luckily survived, and later found out that this individual successfully survived with his family, moved into America, and moved on with his life. That's my best friend. Young Mr. Dr. Brookstein turns to his father and says, "Dad, I asked you why I didn't say hi and introduce me. How could you even look at that fellow? He killed your family. How could you look at him? Look what he's done." Mr. Brookstein turns to him and says to him, "Look, let me explain to you something, my son. Life was difficult. I can't begin to describe to you the challenges, the anxiety, the difficulties, the pain, and the challenges that existed during that time. That person did what he did. I had 2 ways that I could continue with my life. I could be angry, I could hold a grudge, and I could just want to wring that fellow's neck for the rest of my life, or I could move on. Those are my 2 options. I decided to rebuild, married, built a beautiful family, and what that individual did. Was Mr. Brookstein mochel him? Absolutely not. Did he have to be mochelim? Absolutely not. He had no right to be mochelim. That fellow murdered his wife and child. He can't be mochelim. He's the third party. He doesn't have any right to be mochel. But what Mr. Brookstein did do is he separated what occurred to him and how he was going to deal with that aggression. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But it's a real life story, and it's a real life situation, and many of us have these types of situations, these circumstances, where I have to make a decision, hold on the grudge, bear it, live with it, and continue this fight and dynamic that I have with that person, or let it go and move on. Moving on is something that we have to think about and consider. The last issue, and this is the New York Times article on the last page, speaks a lot about, and halacha deals with this also, and that is a way and a methodology and a vehicle to forgiveness is putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and trying to understand where they came from when they wronged you. Mr. Brookstein was very successful. He said to his son, "That person, he was in a hard spot. He was in a difficult situation. I don't forgive him, and he didn't mokel him. But that allowed him to move on by putting himself in that person's shoes and that person's situation. Those are two other very practical approaches of how to deal with forgiveness. So I think in totality, what we have today is an approach to forgiveness. It doesn't mean that we have all the answers, but I do want to share that the Torah does have a way to deal with forgiveness. We want to forgive people. We try to forgive people. There are exceptions. We don't always have to forgive. Third-party forgiving is not applauded and it's prohibited. Forgiving when I don't feel that I have to forgive, or where I've been pained so much, that's machlokas of Yisrael Salanter and Rav Eliyahu Apian. I could split and I could decompartmentalize forgiveness from appeasement according to Rav Salanter, and I can't according to Rav Eliyahu Apian. In terms of practical approaches, how to deal with it, so we have an approach called moving on, we have an approach called putting myself in somebody else's shoes, and I have an approach called the God approach, which is recognizing that there's something bigger out there in the cosmos than me and what this individual did to me. Clearly, there's a lot to talk about. There are certainly possibly more exceptions and situations, but I think it should give us a picture of what we are as a Jewish people, that we're very, very forgiving people, but at the same time, forgiveness doesn't mean just simply turning off all emotional ties and pretending that we don't have a heart and soul. We do. And when I can't forgive, I don't have to forgive. Should I try work out forgiving? Well, that's something you have to talk to your rabbi, your psychiatrist, your psychologist, and try to see how it works, can it work, is there a place, is there not a place, is it something that we could work through, or something I can't work through, and I never will forgive that person. Those are situations that are real, those are situations that are practical, situations that I hope we could all walk away with appreciating more. Thank you for coming, and of course I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
In Tfilas Zaka, so we add one of the things that we say is that I forget everyone except for one of the exceptions is someone who sinned against me, thinking that they would then ask for forgiveness later, that I don't forgive them.
Right.
Is there a word for that?
The Chayadam is the Mechaber of that, and the Mechaber holds there are other exceptions that he lists also. You know, even there it says Lashon Hara I forgive. Shulchan Aruch says I don't have to forgive Lashon Hara. So clearly there I'm going above and beyond the call of duty. 100%. Yes. Yeah, no, it's absolutely not. There is no such thing as turning the other cheek. If I don't forgive, I don't have to forgive. Yes, that's again, that's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's approach, and not everybody agrees to it. But what he did is a halachic mechanism to allow that to happen. If you don't feel that way, you don't have to do it. But that is an approach that you could theoretically take. And certainly the third party forgiveness, that's something that is foreign and prohibited. If a Jew is to forgive a Nazi murderer, that's a crime. Exactly what he said. Sure. If somebody could hurt me unintentionally also, yes, that's a good question. If somebody hurts me unintentionally and I'm affected, I'm offended, yes, I do have an emotional lean against that person and should be discussed and talked about. Communication here is very important for the abused and the abuser to have. If a person is at that point, of course, that a conversation could be good. Again, that's debated among psychologists and many scholars say, is it good to have that dialogue? Is that a healthy thing? Should we bring the aggressor in? Should there be a conversation and communication? Is that healthy? Is that not healthy? Maybe right away it's not a good idea. Maybe 5 years down the line when I'm ready to deal with it, maybe that is a good idea.
If you unintentionally hurt somebody and you don't know that, the guy knows and all the time, it's down.
That's similar to this gentleman's question. The Gemara talks about a case where I should set up a situation for that person to ask my forgiveness. I should set up a situation. I should spend time with that person. Hopefully it'll come up that, you hurt me. Let's talk about it. Being angry at God, that's somebody else says, that's a whole different shir. Being angry at God is a different topic. There is something to that, yes. There is something to that, and that's something also. Yes. Why did Hashem do that? Why was it set up like that? Look, my grandparents suffered horribly in the Holocaust. My grandfather's wife and children were killed. They married my grandmother, and they built. My grandfather was never angry at God. Was he upset and angry? But he moved on, and he recognized.
He sees everything from God, so why do you have to ask Mahina?
That's what the individual asks as well. We have to always, in halacha, separate from God and rule. Of course, God is the issuer of rule, but philosophy and halacha don't always work together. God did something, but the way we work as human beings is that we have to work together as human beings. And the halacha says that there's such a thing as asking forgiveness and giving forgiveness. Even though God did that, that's not enough of a reason not to deal with law and order. Law and order is law and order.
What happens to our soul when we go, we leave, and then we're watching our soul
that we don't? I don't have an answer to that question. I don't know. That's above my pay grade, such a question. I imagine, again, above my pay grade. After our souls leave, I don't understand Bereishis and Noach. After... he didn't know what if people get killed. He didn't feel ready to forgive. He wasn't in a situation, in a position to forgive. He was pained. Again, according to Ben Bechai, he was in a situation where he did not feel he was ready to forgive. He couldn't. He suffered terribly, upwards of 20 years as a result of what the brother did. He wasn't ready to forgive. He couldn't forgive.
One brother, you become a king. Okay, so he's saying that about Peter.
This is a perfect example for both of you, where there's the God approach and the man approach. Yosef recognizes from God. And he said, it was a God sent. But at the end of the day, he still didn't forgive his brothers, even though God sent it. That's a very good example where you see that God deemed something, Yosef recognized it, but at the end of the day, he still didn't forgive his brother. You're saying it wasn't authentic forgiveness? It wasn't an authentic asking of forgiveness?
Asking for forgiveness, number one. Number two, the fact that Abraham accepted the compensation, that takes away from Abraham really forgiving.
So again, the compensation came later. Abraham immediately prays for him when
but
he says...
The question is, did Abraham understand that potentially he could get compensation?
It's a good question. It could be similar to what somebody asked about unintentional forgiveness. You know, Avimelech did something which, according to what the pasuk says, betom levavi, I did it for a very fun reason. I didn't think it was your wife, I thought it was your sister. I said, yeah, I think it's my sister. Okay, maybe that's
so
a good enough reason.
Does Avimelech care about being forgiven from Abraham, or does he really just want Hashem or not?
It's possible. In the text, we don't know. It doesn't say why.
Because we're only
learning from there that Avram forgave him. We're not learning why. He asked forgiveness. Did he ask forgiveness for a true reason or for a colored reason? The prophet says that he even davened for it.
Davened for that he won't be punished. It's different than forgiveness.
Okay, it's a good question. It's a fair point. But the Gemara does learn that. But you're right. You're asking a good question. You don't see in the text that he said, I mochel you.
Yeah.
What the Gemara understands is once he prayed for him, that's even above and beyond forgiveness. That's the greatest thing that he can do.
It's okay, Paya.
But in many instances, there's offense on both sides. And it becomes obvious that in order to resolve the issues, a third party has to get involved.
Correct.
At least.
Yes.
How does one deal with issues of slander in those cases where it becomes necessary to talk about these things?
Very good question. There's rules called to'elis. You're allowed to discuss things for the sake of fixing the problem. There's rules of confidentiality, of course, there's been a confidentiality. Professional confidentiality, those are things that in order that for me to heal, for me to talk about those things are necessities. Absolutely. Again, that doesn't mean it has to be a public forum, that this person has wronged me, everybody has to know about it. That means there has to be a professional way of dealing with that.
It's not an issue of slander, even though that's...
No. If you have to tell somebody that you were abused, first of all, you got to tell the authorities. That's first and foremost.